This is an AMI podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Double Tap. It is a brand new week and a brand new month. It's Monday, it's the 1st of April 2024. Today, VoiceStream Reader is in the headlines and more from the inbox.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey Sean Preece, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic, thank you Stephen Scott, how are you?
Oh, do you know what? I feel good after a nice long weekend and actually not much chocolate. Yeah, I know. It is surprising. It would have been more surprising if that had fired just a little bit quicker. But yeah.
You did spend the time rejigging the studio then, obviously.
No, clearly not. And I'm never going to touch it ever again. Until next time, obviously. It's not moving things. The problem is that my little MIDI controller got broken, so I can't use it anymore.
Have you not reordered another one?
Rely on keyboard shortcuts.
Forget it. You're such an anti-nerd lately. I don't know what's the matter with you. You need to pull up your socks.
I don't know what's going on. I know. Although I will say, I have been a little bit concerned. I think someone's either having, because of course today is April 1st, it's April Fool's Day, although only up until midday.
Oh.
So actually it's just, we've just passed the point
where
you can
fine.
Make an April Fool's Day joke. Okay, so they've all happened. So there'll be no nonsense on here. Well, you know, the usual nonsense, obviously, but not additional fake news. There's no fake news around here.
It takes planning to do something like that. And let's be honest, we're not going to put the effort in. So
jokes. No comedy around here. But you know something? We've had brilliant April Fool's Day ideas over the years. I remember you and I having all these conversations about, oh, we should do this and we should do that. And wouldn't this be funny? And we didn't do any of it.
No, of course not. Because it meant actually putting some effort in.
Yeah, that's true. It's not going to happen. But I think someone might be having some fun with us.
Oh.
So we get this voicemail. And when I listened to it, at first I thought, okay, it's a spam call. Must be a spam call. But then when you think about it, have a listen.
Good morning, this is Tim. I'm calling from California Recycles to check and see if you guys are dealing with any form of electronic waste in your establishment that you wish to get rid of so we can take care of it. Most of the time it's free of charge as well. So if you have anything, please call us back.
Electronic waste lying around?
That's amazing. Someone's heard of your tech drawer.
So I don't know if they're real or not, but either way, you got a free plug on air, that's for sure. But
well done.
There you go. That is it. Well, I'm going to call, but I'm going to ask if they can come to Scotland from California and pick it up for me.
Is it still free? Wow. Okay. That's an interesting voicemail. Did we get much spam?
We don't. On that line. I think even the Double Tap line is so boring to people that the spammers haven't got here yet, which is good news. No, instead we get incredibly intelligent people calling that number. And it's what I love about having the phone number. No, but it's true. I love getting the emails through, but I also love the voicemails because I get a chance to hear from you. It's so nice to hear your voices and where you all are around the world because you do forget sometimes this is a truly international program. We have people listening all over the world.
We're global.
Yeah. And I just want to take this moment to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Lots of new listeners coming to our show. I'm noticing this recently. Lots of new voices, lots of new people in the emails, lots of new people finding us. We had an email just in the other day from Scott, who doesn't listen to our show. He feels our show. Yes, Scott, you feel our show. We are literally at your fingertips.
We are, and we love it. So welcome to the show, Scott.
And do you know how he's doing this?
How is he doing this, Stephen?
By using the new podcast transcript feature on Apple iOS.
Oh, of course. That works so well, doesn't it? I'm always amazed by it.
And how accurate it is as well. And I love that when you mention links, if you mention a link, if you say the link fully, it will create that link, it will transcribe it for you, and then you can just go straight to it. You can actually just you can swipe to it if you select links in your rotor on the phone. That's
very
pretty
clever.
Cool, right?
I've got to say, it does sort of give me high hopes for where, you know, we're going in iOS 18, hopefully, when it comes to AI and dictation, because I think that just works so amazing.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I'm really, really impressed by it. And Scott, I'm glad you're able to Read along, reading by Braille, by the way, for people who are wondering what on earth he's doing. He's reading the yes. Braille of the transcript. Again, it just makes this show more accessible to so many more people. And I'm really grateful, actually, to Apple for doing that. I know a lot of shows are trying to do more, and we definitely try here at AMI, and we do incredible work at making our shows as accessible as possible. With a show like this, it's always challenging because it's a daily show. We're going out every single day. We're at the same time, set time each day. It's not like a podcast where you can just, you know, put the show up whenever you want.
Yeah.
We are on a schedule because it's a broadcast show. So it has to be on air at a certain time. And that means, therefore, that any transcript will follow the show, which is never ideal. But technology is making it possible for us to actually have that content available via podcast, which is how people would consume the transcript anyway, I would imagine.
Yeah.
It just makes it open to more people. So, you know, if someone's deafblind, you can enjoy the show or not enjoy the show. It's entirely up to you. You get that choice.
You can dislike us with anyone else. True equality.
You can rip up the paper and say, never again am I reading that nonsense. Okay, but speaking of which, I just want to say again, thank you to all of you for, you know, getting in touch, writing in, for listening as well. And I know many of you might just listen to us each day. You may not ever think about writing in. I know that's I've never written into a radio show or a podcast or anything else in my life. So, you know, anybody who takes the time to do it and, you know, to the intelligence level that you people have, I just think it's amazing. It's wonderful. And if you're brand new to us today, I'm Stephen. He's Sean. I'm the smart one, allegedly. And he's the other one.
I'm the other one. Simple as that.
I'm not the smart one, by the way, just to be very clear on that. Any guest and any listener, and frankly, anybody who comes on this show will prove that I am not the smart one around here, I'll tell you that. But anyway, welcome to it. Let's get into the emails, because we've lots to dive into today.
Email. We get emails. Emails. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
I'm going to do a bit back to front today because I was going to talk about Voice Stream Reader. We will get to that because there's a bit of a controversy.
Is there?
A bit of controversy. Well, yeah, you mentioned it on the show. Was it last week you mentioned
it? Yes, I did.
Yeah,
Stephen.
You mentioned it last week.
Yes,
Thursday.
I did. Yeah.
And you were talking about the controversy around Voice Stream Reader and their pricing. And, you know, I kind of dismissed it out of
hand. Yeah, you poo-pooed it, Stephen Scott. That's what
I did. I poo-pooed it.
You've just poo-pooed it.
I did.
It was breaking news. I was ahead of the game.
What does that look like on Braille? Poo poo.
That'd be kind of dots.
Funny. Yeah.
One, two,
I know what
three,
the dots are, but I just think it would be, yeah, poo poo. Anyway, good luck picking that up, Apple. but yeah, we will talk about it because now I've read other people commenting on it and it sounds like it's the beginnings of a fight. I'm interested. The Glasgow man in me is coming out.
Oh, of course.
And I want to have an argy-bargy about this. So we'll get to that a bit later. But to your emails first, because there's so many to kick off with. So Rebecca Skipper is where we'll begin, talking about the Mantis and the Orbit.
Okay. I love your coverage of CSUN, but still catching up on podcasts. Now that I've heard your coverage of Orbit Research's announcement, there are a few points I'd like to add. First, consider how each display works with screen readers. While the feature set for the Orbit Q40 and Mantis Q40 are similar, the Mantis Q40 supports split braille with jaws. The Orbit Reader 40 allows the user to control the display using a QWERTY Bluetooth keyboard, which means that Orbit Research probably has similar commands for the Orbit Q40. The Mantis supports more file formats, but there are size limitations. The Mantis doesn't have a calendar. I view the Mantis as a professional device and the Orbit Reader as a consumer device. Of course, I want to pair my display with my laptop. So far, the Lenovo ThinkPad and Surface laptop are my favourite computers because I do not have to press Function, Alt and F4 just to close a window. The Surface even announces the status of the Function key. I like the sound quality of the Surface even though the keyboard can get hot. The Lenovo ThinkPad is reliable and has double the RAM. Love your show as always.
That's really useful, Rebecca. Really useful to get that side-by-side comparison on the two of them.
I'm waiting for you, Stephen, to get your hands on the Orbit Q40 and do a comparison.
Well, yeah, I'd like to. I think, you know, I'd trust Rebecca's view of that more than mine. But I would say that I'm quite happy with the Mantis. So I'm tempted to say, if someone gets it, let's maybe review it on its merits from their perspective. I think comparison's good, though, because you do need to understand the difference between the two. Why is one more expensive than the other? There's also another category here which I find interesting. And it's a classification that HumanWare brought to the Mantis Q40 and some other products last year, and that is the Designed for Surface accreditation, which came
That's
from Microsoft.
Right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
It's interesting. Yeah, and I still to this day don't quite understand. I mean, we've had Andrew Flatres on from Humorware. He's explained it. Again, I'm not a smart person. So, you know, you listen to that interview, you'll probably get more out of it than I did, because I'm still scratching my head, wondering, you know, is it possible to stand an egg on its end, you know, at the same time as the interview is going on? That's how my brain works. But, you know, I think that with that in mind, it clearly has got more capabilities potentially than the Orbit has, which might make sense considering the price difference. Clearly there are differences, as Rebecca's pointing out.
Yeah. Well, I think that the pro suffix and the consumer suffix is very relevant there, very valid that Rebecca brings up. I think there may have a point there. But again, until we get hands-on with the, or let's say someone with better Braille experience gets hands-on with the Reader Q40 or 20, we really don't know its capabilities yet. It's difficult just going off tech specs because, how useful is that in practical terms? We will find out, I hope.
I mean, the only thing I'm kind of interested in more than anything else is the keyboard itself, what the keyboard is like. You know what I'm like with keyboards? And I do find the Mantis keyboard a little bit squishy for me. Could be a little bit firmer. You know the way you can change the firmness of the Braille cells? I wish you could do that with keys, because that would be fantastic as a feature.
That's an idea.
You can have the keys any way you want. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, like you could pimp your keyboard. You know, like hiring or lowering your suspension on your cars. You could do that with your keys. That'd be cool.
I have no idea what that means. But yeah, okay, fine. I know buses can do that. Buses can lower and raise. That's an accessibility thing. Is that the same thing
you're
talking about?
Okay, yeah. But the way I explained it was a little bit cooler. But no, it's fine.
But that's what buses do, isn't it? They go up and they go down.
I don't know. I've never been on a bus.
They lower themselves.
Don't know.
You don't do buses.
I don't understand this. No.
I actually, once the driver of the coach, it wasn't a bus you were on, by the way, it was a coach.
It was a luxury tour coach. That's what that was.
Coach. And we get on the bus. Now, the first time I got on this bus, the guy said to me, "Would you like the bus to kneel?" I thought, "Well, my royalty? What is this? How does that work?" And then when it did it, obviously the whole thing comes down. I didn't realize only one side comes down. And then I started having anxiety attacks over the idea that, you know, this bus is going to, you know, tip over and crush me whilst I'm trying to get on, because I'm not exactly light. I step on, this thing's already at one angle.
So you thought it was just the sheer weight of you that made it tilt down. No, of course it does.
Do you remember the opening credits to the Flintstones when they try and put the thing on the side of the car?
Yes, the rack of ribs,
and the whole thing falls over its side. Yeah, that's me getting on a bus.
Yabba dabba doo, it's Stephen Scott. Yes, of course it does, but to allow wheelchair access.
Yeah, thanks.
There you go.
Wow, that was a handbrake stop there.
I'm just saying, that's why...
Never mind lowering it, you just pulled up the handbrake.
That's why it tilts on one side and not the whole thing just goes down. It tilts on the curb side, doesn't it?
It makes more sense with the whole thing too. Oh, I see, right, okay.
But there's not doors on the other side.
What are we talking about?
Anyway, sorry, carry on. Yes, what are we talking about?
I will say one thing about the Surface Pro. I'm with you on this, Rebecca. The sound quality is probably the closest I've heard to a MacBook, in the sense of the good quality speakers. You don't generally get excellent sound off a PC laptop. You just don't. Unless you spend, I would imagine, a significant amount of money. But even then, I haven't heard great sound off a PC laptop. A Surface, though, really nice. Really nice sound. Best sound I've heard.
Are we talking about the laptop, or are we talking about the tablet Surface Pro?
Well, I'm talking about the tablet, but I think you're talking about the laptop, I'm guessing, Rebecca, because you said the keyboard gets hot, and the keyboard is detachable from this thing, so I don't imagine.
It's a little bit confusing.
In fact, I know it doesn't get warm.
People talk about the Surface, and sometimes they mean the laptop, and sometimes they mean the tablet. I think there needs to be a more distinct naming thing there.
Oh, so Surface Laptop and Surface Pro doesn't work.
It's
for you,
not enough.
It?
No, Surface Pro. I just always assume they're talking about laptop rather than it should be called a tablet. It's a tablet or portable.
Right, Microsoft, over to you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Thank you for that, Rebecca. Kicking off our emails. Liz has got in touch.
Hi. I can't believe I'm about to do this.
Oh.
This is Liz from Massachusetts, USA. Here is my Siri is an idiot story.
Oh.
In 2012, I had just gotten my first iPhone 4S and was trying to get a taxi at a store. I said, "Call McHugh's Taxi." Siri's reply was, "And this is true. Okay, I'll call you too sexy."
Oh no. Oh.
That, my Double Tap friends, was my phone's nickname for me until I figured out how to change it. I laughed so hard that the store employee asked if I was all right. Now I'm going to go hide under my desk. Thanks to you for the show. Laura, you're a brave woman to read all these wacky emails for us. So a huge thanks to you too. Liz.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Laura, as always. Wow.
I don't know what to say.
Brilliant.
About that.
That is brilliant, isn't it?
It's very cool, though. You can make Siri give you a nickname. So if you didn't know, mm-hmm. you can make Siri say, you know, call you too sexy. I may try that after. Just boost
I think
my
I might
confidence.
Try that as well, yeah. It's the only time I'll ever hear it. Angie's got in touch.
Hi, Stephen and Sean. First, I want to say that I found your podcast a few months ago and I enjoy it immensely. I learn a lot and I laugh a lot too. You asked us to share our most embarrassing blind blunders. I have one for you. I've not managed to top this one yet and hopefully I never will. A few years ago, I moved to a new apartment complex with my guide dog and my pet dog, both of whom were Labrador retrievers. The complex consisted of several buildings that were nearly identical. A few days after I moved in, I ordered Chinese takeout and then decided to take both dogs for a short walk around the complex. I didn't plan on being gone very long, so I left my door unlocked. I harnessed up my guide dog and leashed the other dog, and we were on our way. Because we hadn't been in the area very long, and because I had both dogs with me, I wanted this to be a short walk, but my guide had other ideas. When I turned around and started to head for home, she wasn't very cooperative. She wanted to keep going. I really wanted to get home, though, and I knew how to motivate her. I asked if she was hungry, and she immediately started heading for our new place at a fast clip. She stopped in front of the apartment door, wagging her tail and ready to chow down. I opened the door, and we all went inside. I noticed that the place still smelled like my Chinese takeout lunch from earlier. I unclipped the pet dog's leash, and she wandered off, presumably toward the kitchen and the promise of an early dinner. As I bent to unharness my guide, my hand came into contact with the back of the sofa. At that point, I recalled I did not own a sofa.
Oh, no.
To my horror, I realised that my two Labradors and I had invaded someone else's apartment. This person had also left their door unlocked and had also apparently had Chinese food for lunch. Then, to my even greater horror, I recalled that I had let one of the dogs loose. I started calling her name and trying to get us all outside as quickly as possible, but the dogs, having been promised a meal, were having none of it.
Oh, no.
Eventually, I got everyone rounded up and we made it home. We had stopped at the building that was one building over from mine and had entered the apartment in the corresponding location. I called a friend and relayed this story to her. Thank goodness no one was home, I said. How do you know, she asked. For all you know, they could have just been too astonished or frightened to do anything after this lady with two dogs just barged into their apartment. They could have been sitting right there on that sofa, for all you know. There you have it. Keep up the great work. Best, Angie from Virginia, USA.
Wow. Well, that is incredible.
I've got to say, well done. Well done.
Yeah, I think that definitely is deserving of applause, isn't it? That is... what a story.
I'm pretty sure you're not alone. I'm pretty sure we've had a similar story before emailed to us. And when I first moved here, 5-6 years ago now, I walked up the driveway to the wrong house, you know, like two doors down straight, because they're virtually identical. And I just, whatever reason, just walked straight up and up to the side door and just went to open it. It's just... something doesn't feel right. My spidey sense is tingling here. And luckily enough, I was like, oh, this isn't my house. But it's easily done, right? But I've never actually gone in, sat down, started watching TV and eating their Chinese. Not yet, but it may happen.
Kind of wish I had eaten the Chinese if it was me. I'd be tempted to eat it. And then, at least then when I found out later, I'd have had a full tummy. I'd have been okay about that.
Yeah, well, we don't know when the guide dog went wandering off. You know, perhaps they helped themselves.
Well, I think that's the problem, right? Guide dog's eating the dinner. Oh, my goodness, that's brilliant.
We've all been there. You're not alone, but you got to laugh at it. Very good.
I came out of work one day, and the problem with my office was that there was cars parked everywhere, all around the building, and there was a housing nearby, so you know, lots and loads of cars. And I used to get, the taxi company I used to use would have those London Hackney cabs, so those traditional kind of everything you'd imagine a London taxi to be is that. And of course, they're big and noisy as well. And they certainly were in those days, not so much now, but they were big and noisy. You would always know it was there. You could just walk out the door and you'd hear it. But unfortunately, the company had changed the taxi firm I was able to use. So they were using private cars, so traditional cars. So I'd come out of the office and I could never find the car.
Oh, yes.
And I'd be listening for an engine running and that would be one way of doing it. And that was kind of how I managed it. So I'd get in the car and away we'd go and that was fine. And then one day I came out and I got in the car and this woman started screaming. And she's like, take my money, take anything you want, don't harm me, leave my baby. And I'm going, what are you talking about? I just want to go home. And she's like, what? And then we eventually realized between us that I had got into the wrong car, but she also thought I was carjacking her at the same time. Neither was true. So it was. It became a very laughable moment. But the best bit about it was she drove me home.
Oh, she took me home. No, God bless her. Ah, well.
She took pity on me. And at the end of it, I jokingly said, now give me your wallet. how we laughed and spent a night in jail. But it was fine. No, I'm only kidding.
I've done that many a time as well. Waiting for a taxi, getting any car that stops in front of you, just asking directions, no matter what it is. You just, oh, this must be me. Hello. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right. That could go horribly wrong. My wife has done it as well. She's come out of the house and the car's been sitting. You know, she thinks it's the taxi. She gets in. Turns out it's the next door neighbor's friend waiting for them.
Yes.
And she's like, are we going yet? You know, and they're like, and they don't. And the thing, what gets me is most people, unlike this woman, sadly for her, she got really freaked out by it. And I guess rightly so. Here's this big guy getting into the car that she was not expecting, you know. So, yes. Of course, it's terrifying for her. But most people just sit quiet. They don't say anything. And in that example, Angie, I would not be surprised if your friend was right. The person just stood there and watched.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you remember the story? Did I tell you the story about a friend of mine who walked out of a store, like a Best Buy equivalent over here, with a printer?
Yes.
And when she walked, and she said, she realized that she'd left the store with the printer, so she went back into the store. She's blind, she's got the guide dog, she's got the printer in one hand, and she leaves the store and she realizes, goodness, I haven't paid for this. So she goes back into the store, and the security guard approaches and says, can I help you? And she says, yes, I need to pay for this. I walked out. I didn't realize it. I didn't pay for it. So I need to pay for this. And he said to her, oh, yeah, I saw that. I thought you knew what you were doing.
Oh, well, that's nice.
And to this day, I still don't understand what that means.
I know, but at least it's not, you know, I thought you didn't know what you were doing, which is the usual expectation.
I think this is more confusing. This is more like, you know, oh, this is normal. Because my takeaway from that was free printers.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Thank you very much.
You could have got a free brother printer. Should have tried that for the show.
Oh, no. Sorry. Did you just recommend I shoplift with the show there, Stephen Scott?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Sean of the jail.
Sean of the cell.
Sean of the cell. Oh, goodness. But yeah, oh, there's some fantastic stories. If you've got one, you can send them. And it's always good to read on a Monday, isn't it? Okay, let's go on to... Thank you, Angie, for that. That's a brilliant story. Everyone got in touch as well. Now, everyone has been keeping us up to date on news of the AI pin from Humane because he's involved in the group who's in contact with them. So he's got an update for us on this.
Hello, Double Tappers. Thought I'd give you a quick update on the AI pin situation regarding the unlock method. They appear to be experimenting with a nifty sounding method with the touchpad on the pin itself. The idea is to trigger it, first you would draw a circle on the touchpad, then you can use a combination of swipes, taps, or both as your code. I think Android has had this pattern input method for some time, at least they used to. Humane have released yet another video on YouTube, and this method was briefly touched upon. Accessibility didn't get mentioned, nor is the video audio described, but at least they are receptive to feedback. Kind of. Mm. They did listen to feedback regarding the laser code input method, after all, so I guess that's a step in the right direction. Now to see if I can get them to come up with an alternative method to find and connect to a Bluetooth device. Anyway, I've rambled on long enough. I'll still be keeping an eye on this thing. I haven't given up on it yet. Evren,
you are our eyes and ears.
Yes.
For Humane on this.
Or
this
maybe just ears. That's fine.
Yeah, or ears. No.
Or fingertips.
Don't get me started
fingertips
on this.
Fingertips is fine as well.
Or fingertips. any other senses we've forgotten about?
No.
Smell. Well, smells. You're the nose.
Okay.
For us.
That's enough.
Okay, then. Let's move on. Yeah, that's it. Taking it too far. Yeah, do you know what? I'm kind of losing a little bit of sympathy here, you know, with this company, because I feel there's a lot of conversation going on out there. Clearly, there's a lot of people talking about accessibility, us included, and they're not responding about it. They're not responding. And I feel that this is a massively missed opportunity, the brand new day one product, to even... what do I expect? I suppose the question is, and I get this a lot from people, what do you expect them to do? Do you know what? At this stage, I expect a day one rewrite, a page one rewrite. Because I would say at this point, they could go back and say, we should implement this now, this feature, this accessibility in our way, whatever they're going to build into it, do it now. Just do it now. Because I tell you, the amount of respect they would get from people for that, and also for them, it would be a lot easier to do this now than wait another year when they have to go back and retrofit it in because a court case has gone up against them or someone, you know, we know the American charities and organizations for blind people, they get quite litigious around this stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, and rightly so, I think, on occasion. I mean, not all the time. I'm not always for it, but I do think sometimes companies just aren't listening. And if they're not listening and they're not doing anything,
what else can
they're
you
not
do?
Making something accessible. Exactly. What else can you do? So, you know, if an organization decides to take that organization to court, then I think that's a fair cop, frankly. But they're not listening here. And, you know, the idea of a video not being audio described, okay, I can maybe forgive that a little bit. It's not great, but it's okay. I'll forgive that over accessibility within the product, or at least talking about accessibility. And don't say it's coming, because if you're telling me it's coming now, it's not coming. I'm telling you that it's not coming because you don't know what it is. You don't know what's coming. If I ask you what is coming, you won't be able to tell me because mm-hmm. you don't know.
Accessibility
you're just
is
saying
coming.
It's coming.
Is it? What does that mean then?
and what does that mean to you, right? Because I think this is another thing when we talk about accessibility. A lot of people think it's availability. They don't understand what accessibility means. Oh, well, it'll be available in shops in a few months. Yeah, I don't mean that.
Yes, I don't mean availability.
And we're in our world, we know what it means, but a lot of people don't know what it means. And we have to, you're doing that.
Let's be fair. I mean, accessibility can mean different things to different people. There could be accessibility built into something which is still inaccessible to me as a blind person, right? So accessibility is not a clear cut definition when it comes to disabilities. But
there's no one answer. There's not one accessibility. That's the problem.
It does. Yes, this does annoy me. I think you're right to point out this is a startup, and this is almost got the image of a cutting edge technology. And to be here where we're at when it comes to accessibility, I'm sorry, not having audio description as an option on your videos at this point. I know, I can forgive it, okay, but it's another nail in the coffin.
Yeah, but do you know why I forgive it? I'll tell you why. Because if you don't even have accessibility in your product, there is absolutely no way you're going to make your videos accessible because you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
That's the point.
But you mentioned they're listening, and you may be right. It may be that they are listening in these groups, and that's all very good and very cool. But I'm more interested in the talking as well. Let's have a conversation about this, what we want, what accessibility needs we have, and what we expect. Let's have a conversation going. So far, this is a one-way street.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, because we need to be involved in this conversation. We need to know what accessibility is going to look like in a product like this. You know, there's no point going and I do fear sometimes that what happens is these engineers go away and say, hey, we need to build an accessibility, so let's just do XYZ, follow some code, follow some, you know, WCAG guidelines, and that's it. But actually, then nothing really changes for us. And it's different on a product like this, because this is not the traditional type of device where you've got various input methods. At least it doesn't appear to be. And the main input method seems to be via touch on your hand from a laser display, you know, displaying the screen on your hand. That is not going to work for so many people.
No.
I mean, there are massive amounts of people who would be unable to use this. And the majority of those people will be disabled, but there are a lot of people outside of disability who will not be able to do that either.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we're going to end up either in a huge digital divide going forward, and it takes a company like this, which is starting out. I'm not saying this is going to be the first. It's not going to be the last company to do this and create this kind of product. But it is important that we set the stall. And in 2024, you would think, and I say this, and then I immediately, in my own head, the other voice says, what are you talking about, Stephen? Yes, it's 2024, but nothing's changed. We still have people who think that we are incredible because we got out of the house in the morning. We still have people who talk to us in the street and say, thank goodness I'm not you. So, you know, we're still there in 2024. We've moved on a little bit. The needle has moved, but nowhere near as far as it has on other cultural and social issues. Nowhere near. We are still invisible to most people. And that's a problem. That's a major problem. We're either seen as nothing, non-existent, invisible, or we're not seen as enough to be bothered about. The amount of private conversations I've had with individuals over the years, people who are trying to build products, people who are interested in investing in products, who often say the same thing. Yeah, the market's just not big enough. It's not worth it. We can't invest in that. And that's a major problem in our community. It's a major issue. Yep. I don't know what the solution is, but that is the problem. That is part of the problem. And until people realize that, and I hear this phrase a lot, temporarily disabled, where people talk about the idea of, you know, the example given is if you broke your arm or you were walking down the street with a bag of groceries in one hand, you know, you're temporarily disabled in that moment. I actually think we're all temporary disabled. I'd put it that way. And what I mean by that is we're all going to get disabled in one way or another in life. We're all going to get old.
Yes.
Things are going to change. Our bodies are going to change. We're going to have needs, whether it's physical, whether it's motor, whether it's visual, whether it's hearing. It doesn't matter. We're all going to be affected by this in some way. And so as a result of that, wouldn't you rather build a product for everyone for all time, rather than building it for today? Who are you actually building it for? Because actually, if you think about it, and this is the argument I'd make, you're actually building it for the smallest market, for the people who are not yet disabled, which is everybody.
All right. Okay. Now relax, Stephen. Are you feeling better? You know, they're not actually on the show with us today. You know,
I'm going to send this to them. I'm going to clip this. I'm going to send it to them. I want them to hear this. Whether they pay any attention or not, I don't know. It's mm-hmm. worth trying. Okay, look, stick around. We're going to get into another debate next over Voice Stream Reader. Stick around. We'll get to more of your emails as well.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Oh, that's nice. Just in the break there, my wife's guide dog is home today. She's feeling a little bit poorly, so she's home today with me.
Oh.
And she's coming for a nuzzle during the show. So the one thing I'm pleased about is she's not wearing her bell. Otherwise, this would be a very funny program. It'd be like Christmas in here.
I like that.
Not Easter.
I like that. When you can hear the guide dog jingling or scratching their ears in the background. I like that. It adds a bit of atmos.
Oh, listen, I prefer it, actually. I do like her having the bell on, because then I know where she is.
Oh,
that's the point, right?
Yes.
That's the whole reason. But it's funny, because sometimes we go for a wander, you know, around the park or whatever, and she will be, oh, my goodness.
Oh, she just shook her head.
She shook her head, but no bell. But, you know, that bell, it just drives the other dogs absolutely wild. It's like a calling card. Coco is fine. She's off for a scratch. Okay, yeah. Good for her. Right, let's talk about Voice Stream Reader, because this, as you were mentioning this on Thursday, and I just coming around to this story, I was reading
just
a bit about
around.
It online last night.
Yes.
Yeah, I was. Just literally, yeah. And I was interested in this because I had this app ages ago. I think I may have bought it at one point. I haven't used it in a long time, but give us some of the history here. What is going on with this app, and why is everyone so worked up about it?
Well, I'm the same as you. I've had this app on my phone for absolutely years, and I think I did the lifetime purchase. So we have talked to the developer of this on Double Tap a couple of times, I think, Winston Chen. Really interesting guy. And a while ago, he was talking about how he was going to bring in subscription for the Voice Dream Reader app. By the way, if you don't know what the Voice Dream Reader app, it's a really accessible and easy way to read all your documents, basically, PDFs, Daisy books, whatever it may be. It's just a really cool app. And Winston was saying, you know, to keep development ongoing and to keep it, you know, working with each new iteration of iOS and, you know, just basically keep it updated, then a subscription is the only way to go. And absolutely fine. We can understand that. We've talked about subscription models in the past. But the point being that for those people that already had bought it with the one-off lifetime purchase, then obviously they wouldn't need to subscribe. Now, if we fast forward on a year or two until now, the Voice Dream Reader app has been sold to a investment group, and they have just announced that on the 1st of May this year, that everyone using the app must subscribe to carry on using it. So from the 1st of May, you will have no option. You won't be able to add any more documents to the app unless you sign up for the subscription. Now, I'm a little bit confused. There's a little bit of confusion about the subscription model. What I get offered is just a yearly subscription. Here in the UK, it's £59.99. It says the regular price will be £79.99, but I don't know when that comes in. And the big controversy here is that, hang on, if I've already paid for a lifetime license way back when, why am I suddenly being forced to subscribe? What happened to that lifetime purchase that I bought? Is that suddenly not valid anymore? Well, the answer seems to be, no, it's not valid anymore. If you want to carry on using this app from the 1st of May, you will need to subscribe.
So who made the promise that it was going to be lifetime?
Well, yes. Now, this is a point we could have an argument about. I went to the AppleViz website. Everyone check out AppleViz, of course. Fantastic. And there is a forum thread on this. And if you look through it, a year ago, I think is probably when Winston announced the subscription, there was some talk about this, and VoiceDream Reader themselves posted on there saying, look, this is always going to be, there is going to be no subscription cost for people who've bought this already. That's not going to happen. The trouble is, when you post anything, you know it stays there forever. So if you look at the start of that thread, you can see that post from VoiceDream Reader. But since then...
But hang on. Who is VoiceDream Reader? Is it Winston Chen,
that's
or is it a new company?
That's why I didn't say specifically Winston, because I don't know who posted that original post on there. But I'm assuming that was pre the acquisition by this new investment group. So I'm assuming it is basically Winston's post on there.
Well, see, to me, that makes it fairly cut and dried, because the new company don't hold any... There's no reason for them to honour that, really. I mean, they could have chosen to honour it, and, you know, they may realise that the community that has bought into this app already may be their main customers, and therefore they're not going to be able to invest or make enough money out of this app outside of that customer base, so therefore they do have to ask those people to pay in. That's would be my take on this. You know, otherwise it would have made sense for the company to say, okay, look, we're going to make this app so that, you know, loads of people can access it. And, you know, you're a small community, so you've paid in, you've paid your lifetime, we'll honor that and we'll go get our funding elsewhere. That, I think, would have been a smarter move, but it depends on the customer base size. There may not be enough people to make that happen. And like I say, maybe the people who have the app already and have paid the lifetime fee, maybe they're solid customer base. I don't know. But I would say from a company perspective, once a new business takes over, I don't think they need to honour previous agreements. I mean, there's no contract here.
No, I think
legally... It
seems
legally to be a post on a website, right? I mean, and it was a previous owner. So does that hold any weight?
No, no.
To court? I don't think it would.
I think legally you're absolutely right.
It's a morality question. Then.
That yes, for me it absolutely is. Well, not just morality. I also think it's a reputation of the app has built up a lot of respect in the community over the years. Everyone loves the app, and to see it sort of tarnished in this way, I think it is a respect for its customers and users. But I mean, I'm not 100% one way or the other on this, because as you mentioned, there's also the business aspect. I mean, when Winston himself first announced that, you know what, I need to move to a subscription model to make this worthwhile. Otherwise, I just can't afford to keep doing the app. So do you either lose
it? People weren't happy then either.
People weren't happy then at all. But I actually thought he made great points. I can't invest that amount of time in developing something if it's not paying my bills at the end of the day. And I think everyone can relate to that. And
he told us the story. I remember the story he told us about the time that the app had failed. Something had gone wrong with the app and it was causing major issues. And he was on holiday and he didn't have the tools he needed with him. He didn't have a laptop, didn't have anything with him. He said, big mistake, I left the laptop at home. And he had to cut his holiday short to go home and fix the problem. Now, that costs money. Now, you could argue, well, you know, you own the app, it's your problem. Okay, yeah, fine. But who's paying for that plane ticket? Who's paying for the cost of the disruption to his holiday? And all of that goes with it, right? So I do think there's a question about the way these apps have been designed and the way they've been priced. I think this is a legacy problem in App Store land. I remember when the apps came out, I maybe was one of the very few voices that actually said this. But from the beginning, when the App Store came along and apps were being made available for 99 cents or whatever it was, way back when, I remember thinking, how can this be sustainable to anybody? Because let's say everyone buys the app, then what? How is it going to be sustainable long term? How can these guys continue to make money? It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's a bad business model.
It's a disposable app at that point. If I'm paying 99 cents or nothing for an app, I'm not expecting that app to stay around more than 12 months. If that,
yeah, exactly.
It's just a throwaway thing. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
I mean, there's question marks over pricing. There's always question marks over that. And there's always question marks over how much money something costs. And we're all a little bit fed up with subscriptions, let's be honest. I mean, we all are paying for subscriptions all over the place. And companies have thought this is a smarter move to get more people involved, to, you know, bring up the numbers, you know, create a steady income flow for a company. I mean, it's a smart business idea. It's just unfortunate when every company's doing it, it gets a little bit wearing because your bank account suddenly is being emptied every month with $5, $10 here.
Yeah, but...
And it gets a bit much after a while, I think.
If you come at this as a fresh customer, as a fresh user of this app, I mean, I'm not sure you have as much to complain about.
Because you would have anything, because you have no comparison.
No
to,
comparison. No, exactly. You haven't already invested in something that you think you already own and being asked to pay for again. But, I mean, there's no denying the value of this app when it comes to education. I know lots of people, lots of students, for example, use this app for looking up for reference for whatever it may be. And I think that was part of the reason why Winston was so quick to fix the problem when it arose, because he knew people were depending on it.
But this is the argument I hear a lot, right? I hear this argument from people who say, you know, it's very valuable and it's very important. Well, if it's that important, then you will understand that there has a cost associated. And clearly this new business that's taken it over is thinking about sustaining this app rather than just having it available and then it dies off. I mean, how many times have we had this conversation? I mean, I'm consistent on this. I think I have always said I feel for developers. When I interview a developer, I always ask them if they've had a good meal recently because they always seem so thin and they never eat. And I say, you must eat a good meal. And not only to eat a good meal is to have money to buy a good meal. And therefore, you need to make money. So it's all very well creating something. And developers are bad for this, especially those who develop for the blind community and for the disability community generally. Well, I want to do something good. Yet that doesn't pay you. It doesn't work. And actually, it doesn't really work for us either because it turns against us in the end. Because if that app goes away, we lose it. And this is what would happen with VoiceStream Reader. So what would happen is, okay, if everyone gets their way, all the complainers who say, I'm not paying for it and I'm not happy with this and blah, blah, blah. Okay, you get your way, you don't pay for it. Excellent. You've now got a lifetime guarantee. How long is that lifetime guarantee going to last? A few months?
Yeah, it's true.
Before they pull the app and they just kill it off? And then there's no app. That's it. And that's basically where we're at. It seems to me it's a case of, well, look, these developers need paid. And sometimes I think we kind of forget what goes into creating an app. You don't just build it and then stick it in the App Store and forget about it.
No, that's
not
true.
How it works.
No, that's true.
A huge amount of continuing development and platforms. I am continually shouting at ITV in this country, in the UK, or one of our main broadcasters here, to fix the Apple TV app. But every time I do it, I'm always conscious of the fact that I know they have probably, I don't know how many devices they must have to make that app for, and a very small development team to do it. Now, in cost-wise, it's irrelevant because it's soaked up by the larger company and they make money through advertising and everything else. So, you know, the money's not an issue there, but it's about development time and effort. It's the work that's the problem and the amount of work and also the continuing shifting sands. Oh, Apple have just issued 4 new updates for all their different devices. Well, where's the Apple Vision Pro version and where's this? And you know, all of this needs to be developed. And where's the Android version? You shouted at Microsoft, and they're a huge company.
Wait. Like anything else, though, there's some balance to this, right? We're talking about the developer's lot there, and you're absolutely sure. I don't think I could disagree with anything you said. But there's also, the flip side of that is the user's side of it. You know, the user's experience, the user's accessibility to an app. I've got to say, I've just looked at the VoiceStream Reader app for the first time in ages, actually. I've opened it up. And the first thing I noticed was something that just says right nav button. I mean, the label isn't perfect there. I'm not saying it's an unlabeled button and accessibility is going downhill, but it's just something that stood out to me is that should we start to worry about this now that another company is in charge of it? It's not as easy as just saying, of course, developers have got to eat, so everything should be subscription. I totally get what you're saying.
That you're conflating the issue a little bit for me because I get that argument. I think that's a good discussion. I think it's a good discussion to have, but it's not the relevant discussion today. Today it's about sustaining the app. Now, whether or not the company go on and make the app inaccessible as a result of work they do on it, that is very much something that we will definitely want to have a discussion about if and when that happens. But I think today the conversation is, should people be prepared or expected to pay for it if they've been promised by the previous developer, or the original developer of it in this case,
yes,
a lifetime subscription? I don't think the rules apply there. And I don't think, even in a morality sense, I don't think it's unfair to go to the user base and say, look, guys, to keep this thing going, we've got to charge you. It's the only way it can be sustained. Alternative is it goes away.
Yeah.
You know, unless some of the complainers want to get together and develop it themselves, I'd say put up or shut.
Well, where there,
if it means enough to you, pay for it. Just pay for it. End of story. And you know what? If you don't want to pay for it, don't pay for it. Just stop complaining about it.
All right. Wow. It's only Monday. Stop ranting already.
I'm having a great time.
Okay. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Let me just say this. If you're worried about this at all, there are other alternatives out there. The first one, obviously, that springs to mind is Dolphin Easy Reader. It's free, does a lot of the same stuff, and is very good as well. There's also, is it called Speech Central?
Yes.
So, you know, you're not locked into this. It is very good, Voice Dream Reader, as we've said. But
it's like the Apple DOJ case, isn't it? It's like this again, where it's like, oh, there's only one choice. You know, there's only one choice. There's not one choice. There's loads of choices. What happens, though, and I hear this a lot, and I get it. I 100% get it. I hear people who say in the blind community, oh, well, you know, I mean, I'm so used to this app, and this is the way I do it. And, and other apps are okay, but this one's got what I want in it. I get that. And my view on that is, okay, so if you can afford to pay for it, pay for it. But if not, there are alternatives out there. And I think that you should start investigating them. Because ultimately, you're the consumer. You do have choice.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you're not tied in. That's the point. If you were tied in, if this was the only app in town, we were back to the days of KNFB Reader and that was it, and they turned around and said, hey, you know, we gave you this lifetime guarantee and then they took it away, I think people would be right. I would change my view on it then. Because it's different. There would be no other choice. There is choice. So if there is choice, make a choice. Pay for it, don't pay for it, go get something else. Because there are other accessible options out there. Then, once this thing's up and running with this company and with this new subscription, if accessibility starts to fall by the wayside, then we go after them. Pitchforks at the ready.
Very good. I got to say that the most funny thing about this for me is the... apparently, the name of the investment group is Applause Group. So,
not much of that at the
not
minute.
Not much applause going on at the minute.
But, more booze.
We will see what's going on. Ooh.
Tell us what you think. Feedback at doubletaporair.com. 1-877-803-4567. If you use Voice Dream Reader, tell us your thoughts. Would you pay for it? If you don't use Voice Dream Reader, and use something else that's equally as good, tell us so we can share it with everyone else. Let's get back to the emails. And Greg got in touch, our good friend Greg in Pennsylvania, on the subject of mobility tech.
Hello, guys. I'm so sorry that you feel as if I can't write an email to you without throwing a punch. I do indeed tend to write only when I have a criticism or profound disagreement to express. The reason I listen and continue to listen to your show is that I enjoy it. Enough of that already. Let's get to the punches.
Okay.
There is a great deal of distance between your dilettante approach to technology for the blind and, as Stephen likes to say, being an instruction manual. Personally, I wish you gave us enough information about blind tech so that people could get some idea of whether or not a particular piece of tech might be appropriate to their own lives and situations. That's just my personal view. I don't think you cover enough tech, and the tech you cover only in a cursory manner. I also fervently disagree with Stephen's rant against new experiments with mobility technology. We need more, not less. I, for one, don't like being hit in the face by low branches and street signs and mailboxes. I do supplement my cane with GPS, and Stephen does complain about the last 10 yards problem and has stood at a brick wall because he could not find the Starbucks he was looking for. But he says with vehemence that a cane is all he needs, and how dare anyone try to find a better way. I personally miss being able to use two hands. I say keep working on solutions. The technology is almost there. The main obstacle is user interface without mental or sensory overload and the need for drivers to continue to recognise us as visually impaired. I call on all you inventors and entrepreneurs to ignore Stephen's silly rant and keep working to solve the problem. Greg in Pennsylvania, mad as hell at Stephen, but loving him anyway.
Greg loves me.
An iron fist in a velvet glove there. That was the perfect one.
Yeah, that was very nicely put, yes.
It's hard to argue with him though, right? I mean, when it comes to your rant against tech and mobility aids, I mean, what he said there makes perfect sense.
Okay.
All right, let's not go back into it. Okay.
Okay, all right, fine. I can if you want. I don't have to.
Oh, go on then. Just a quick one.
Okay, fine. Since we're in that mood today. No, look, I get where you're coming from, Greg. And you're absolutely right. And you make a very good point about having two hands again. That is something which you do kind of forget. You almost just forget and you just assume that for the rest of your life, you're only going to have the use of one hand when you're out and about because you've got one hand on a cane or a dog. So that is very true. I just, personally, I don't think I'd ever leave the house with anything that, I mean, it would need to be one heck of a piece of tech to make it or allow it to be trusted to be able to replace a cane or a dog.
Yes, I agree with
you. Which is what we're talking about. And that's why I'm just not for this. And again, I don't see the point. Yeah, it would be nice to only use, you know, not use any hands and have both hands free. But honestly, I think for the comfort and the goodness that a guide dog and a cane brings, which there's nothing wrong with, and I wish someone would agree with me on that point at least, then I just don't see the point in trying to replace it. Now, you talk about head height and chest height. I think that's a different thing. And I think there are tools that will come out that will hopefully be able to fix this. The problem right now is whatever it is either a toilet seat around your head or it's a phone in your pocket or swinging from a lanyard. And I don't think that's appropriate either. So there's definitely something needs to change. I mean, we're talking earlier about the Humane AI pin. I mean, if they had brought in accessibility to this thing, that could have been a useful tool. It could have done some of this because you're wearing it on your lapel, right? It's a very small device and it would be able to potentially see what's in front of you and give you feedback. But of course, as you've already said, it's a lot of the sensory overload issues that these devices provide. And even with the ones at the minute that, you know, not even replace, but well, in some cases do replace the white cane, the amount of information, as we've talked about this before, the amount of information they give is just too much. So I'm just not in love with these ideas. Look, I'm all for new inventions, all for new technologies, but I'm seeing too many ideas coming forward that we're expected to pay for.
I agree with you on that point. I was going to pick you up on too many ideas, but I agree with you on that.
But we're expected to pay for them. It's not like anyone's giving us these to try or saying, hey, try this out. It's like, oh yeah, $500, please. To a group of people, by the way, who 75% of which, in most countries, are not in work. But we're expected to pay for some beta test product. I'm seeing example after example after example of this going on. And it's just, I'm getting fed up with it. I'm getting fed up with it because I'm not seeing any solution here which is actually in any way working for us. And in most cases, these companies aren't even talking to us. So I'm sorry, that's why I'm...
And that's it. Time's up, Stephen Scott. I gave you your time. Well done.
Okay, fine.
Thanks, Greg.
Let's talk about talking clocks. You know this subject just rears its head every so often. Kyla's been in touch.
Good morning, Double Tappers. It's Kyla again. I'm currently on spring break and having the time of my life,
spring
although
break.
The whole education thing is starting to get to me. I hope this message finds you in the best of conditions. As always, I truly enjoy hearing all the discussions that take place on the show. Firstly, I want to congratulate you guys on making it to the first day of spring without completely losing your sanity. Mm. Considering the fact that I'm still having to go through math class, worrying about my grades and trying to figure out adulthood, all while counting down the days to the last day of school and keeping on all the latest tech news, I am extremely jealous, but that's besides the point.
Maths.
I also want to alert you guys that there are two portable talking clocks on the market that I would like to know more about.
Oh.
Cobalt is at it again with their dual voice single button clock, which features two voice choices and one daily alarm with 10 sound options. In 12-hour mode, it will also tell you the time of day, e.g. 9 a.m. equals 9 in the morning. The Zeitgeist 2 from CareTech also made it onto my wishlist this year. I saw a video of the previous version and I'm dying to know what the new voice sounds like, and yes, believe it or not, I have already read the user's manual. I can't find any content on these on YouTube, so any demos would be greatly appreciated. Moving away from the topic of time, HIMS just released their new Braille eMotion display, which features text-to-speech, Wi-Fi, and 5 Bluetooth connections. Personally, I'm quite disappointed that they didn't release a version of the Braille Sense 6 with mobile data capabilities, but I digress. To be honest, I'm also very impressed with the recently released Sense OS version 2.0. They need to start using that title. LOL. It upgrades the device to Android 12 and adds a to-do list application, an app installer for commonly used Android apps, an optional add-ons menu for easy access to Braille Sense-specific programs, a ChatGPT interface, and the classic games menu from the Braille Sense U2. I have sent them an email with feedback that I had regarding version 2.1. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I strongly believe a native NLS Bard integration would be absolutely fantastic. Thanks for sticking to the end. Cheers, Kyla.
P.S. Oh. I don't know how Cobot feels about American accents on their products, but I'm strongly considering applying for possible voice work in both English and Spanish. I'm still on the fence, though. Let me know your thoughts. P.P.S. Check out my YouTube channel, The Blind Spot YT. I only have one video up there, so it's not very exciting, but more content is on the way just as soon as I can get all this disgusting math content out of my brain long enough for it to start working again. I'll let you know how that goes.
Maths.
You're going to pick him up, seriously. You're going to pick Kyle
no,
up.
No, I'm definitely not. I mean, that was an amazing email, by the way. So much information in there. That was fantastic. And we would love to review all these products, by the way, but we simply can't buy them all. A company sends us something to review, and we're sort of relying on our great listeners as well.
Yeah, that's it. So if you've got a talking clock you want to tell us about, maybe you bought one recently, get in touch with us. And more talk on that actually coming up. We didn't get to that email today or many others, but we'll get to more, I promise you, as the week goes on. That is it for today. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Also, thank you for all those emails as well. It's truly a global show, Sean. Everyone's listening from all over the place.
I know.
And it's just incredible. I'm so amazed. I'm also so thankful because of all the things you could listen to, and basically that is anything else on earth, you choose us. And I find that every day utterly incredible. Yes. So thank you so much for that. Keep the feedback coming. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. You can call and leave a voicemail, 1-877-803-4567. We love to hear your voice wherever you are in the world. And also, you can find us on social media and on YouTube. You know, it's not Kyler alone who's got a YouTube channel, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Blindspot, YT. No, it's at Double Tap Video for us. Listen, we'll catch you tomorrow with more of those emails and voicemails and conversation. Keep it coming. Catch you tomorrow, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.